This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. And broadcasting from the People's Republic of California, we have Mr. Davi Barker, also known as the Shiny Badger. Are you there, Davi?
I'm here. I'm awake. I'm ready to go. And we have an exciting guest.
Yes, from the Granite State, the Porcupine State, the New Hampshire State. We have the president of the Free State Project, Mrs. Carla Garrick. Are you there, Carla?
I am indeed. Thanks, guys.
Excellent. Excellent. Can you speak up a tiny bit, Carla? You got quieter. You got shy on the radio.
I did? Okay.
You're not shy.
I can't imagine Carla being shy.
I'm quite loud. Turn up that dial.
So I've never been to Porkfest. I'm going to Porkfest. Heck is frozen over. I said I'd never leave Wyoming, but I am going. And I'm not a Free State Wyoming person. I have friends who are, but my wife and I just live here. We moved here from California, and she's actually been looking at pictures in New Hampshire lately and going, and looking at property prices there and going, So
what you're doing, Michael, is you're just living LibPair, because in LibPair there is no Wyoming and there is no border between you and Porkfest.
Yes, there's a silver string of liberty connecting all three of these places that we're at. So, Carla, tell me about Porkfest.
Sure. So Porkfest, the Porcupine Freedom Festival, is now in its 11th year. We had a big shebang last year for the 10th year anniversary, and we're kind of concerned how we were going to top it, but I think we managed to do that. It's a week-long camping experience. Some people kind of call it the Burning Man of libertarians, and it is a little like that, but, you know, probably not quite as artsy, although, you know, I'd love to see that happen at some stage. And we have an incredible lineup for this year. I believe there are over 300 events. Our keynote speakers are Joel Salatin, food freedom fighter, you know, really, really awesome, great speaker. I've seen him speak several times, just an all-around great guy. We have Nick Gillespie from Reason Magazine and Reason TV. He'll be coming out. It's his first time. I've been working on him for a lot of years, so I'm really excited that he's finally going to be up there with us. And then we have Patrick Byrne, who's the CEO of Overstock.com. And him I snagged because, you know, Overstock was the first big retailer to start to take Bitcoin, and we have a large, robust Bitcoin community here. And so I sent him a note. You know, I had a Skip Tracer person find me a private email for him, and I let him know that when Bitcoin was accepted on Overstock.com, New Hampshire had the highest per capita spending in the world on the first day. That's how, you know, robust the community is.
Wow. So is there music and food also?
There is music. There's food. We have this area that we call the Agora Valley, which of course is, you know, sort of a reference to the Agora and to what I like to call kind of, I think it's the freest free trade zone that exists in America, at least.
That's where I'll be.
Yeah, and Davi, of course, brings, you know, his Bitcoin stuff and his buttons, and I saw some photos of great merch, so yeah. I'm excited to stop by and see what you have.
Excellent. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of Porkfest and of the Free State Project, for those who don't know?
Sure. So let me start with the Free State Project, just for your listeners who might not know who we are. We're basically a geo-ideological movement trying to concentrate 20,000 libertarians in the state of New Hampshire. New Hampshire was picked about 13 years ago now as the destination, but people got a chance to vote, you know, where it should be. Wyoming was on the list, the Dakotas, you know, all the sort of usual suspects, Alaska. So basically the places that have a fairly small population and that rate pretty well on freedom metrics like tax, you know, taxes, quality of life, all of that good stuff. And the original idea was started by Jason Sorens, who at the time was doing his graduate work at Yale, and he had grown really just frustrated by libertarian politics in general, and wrote this essay and was kind of like, hey, what would happen like if instead of us all being, you know, the 3, 4, 5%, that number's going up, of people who sort of identify as libertarians, what would happen if we put a bunch of them together and we could actually start to affect real tangible change? And so people loved the idea, and, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. So we have, of the 20,000 we need to have sign up, we're getting close to 16,000. I'm really hoping we can start to accelerate that, trigger the move, and get the bodies here, because we're at the stage where, you know, people run for office, people do civil disobedience, there's a large, robust independent media movement here, and, you know, people are bringing businesses, starting businesses, Bitcoin, all that good stuff, and we need the bodies on the ground now. There have been votes this last session for people who are, you know, into politics where, you know, they're losing with two votes. And it's like, geez, man, can we get more people here? And, you know, and really work both on, you know, as I said, the political front, but then also just the sort of social and cultural side as well.
So when, that sounds good, when people when people do make the move there, do you show up at their house with a welcome van and give them a lay of porcupine quills and $500 and a handgun?
Not quite. I mean, we do have a welcome wagon, and people will actually show up. It's a pay it forward system, and people will show up and help you unpack your moving truck. And that's actually pretty special because it does help to build community. One of the things a lot of new movers will say to me is, why don't we understand, you know, when you're outside New Hampshire, and I'm really happy to hear you say that your wife, you know, is looking at the social media stuff and kind of going, oh, this does look attractive. I mean, we've been working really hard on that. Is when I moved, and I moved in 2008, I moved from New York City, and had the misfortune of moving in February in a blizzard, and I'm from Africa, so I'm kind of not the smartest person around snow, and, you know, 15 people showed up in a blizzard. They actually unpacked the truck faster than I could get the beer and pizza. So we help each other move in, but, you know, we don't believe in subsidies, so, you know, you bring your own handgun.
Yeah, and and it's a good place for moving, for especially if people have their own. Not saying you can't move if you don't have your own job, but it's a really good idea for people who bring their job with them, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, what I would recommend is either, you know, bring your job with you. We have a lot of techies, so a lot of people do actually manage to work remotely from here. Or, you know, make sure you have a little cushion, you know, a couple of months savings, 3 to 6 months. We do have a lot of infrastructure that the porcupines, and so once you move here, you're kind of, you know, they call us free staters, but really you're just part of the porcupine community, which just means you're one of, you know, a liberty lover who's here, and the porcupine community is larger than just people who've moved. There are lots of locals who love us. They see us as reinforcements, and we have job search pages on Facebook. There's a network here, so, you know, once you get plugged in, we have a new movers party once a month where the new movers come and they can meet everyone else and kind of network and go, hey, I'm looking for a job in this industry. And then we're like, okay, who do we know? So it really is trying to build that bigger community. But yeah, you know, jobs are good, having a little bit of money, people rent out apartments within the community. And basically, I mean, how it works here is it's very reputation based. If you come, you know, and your word is your honor, and you kind of stick to the deal, you know, you might even find a landlord who's willing to do a private deal with you. But then, you know, your reputation's on the line. So, you know, stick to whatever the terms were.
Good. Davi, do you have something?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious what happens to the Free State Project once it's successful. It seems like it's sort of, you know, we're a stone rolling downhill now. It feels like it's sort of inevitable that we're going to succeed in getting at least the signatures. Whether or not all 5,000 people move is another question, but I'm sure a lot of them will. So what happens to the organization after its stated mission finishes? Does it sort of absolve, or does it change its mission?
the board actually talked about this at the last board meeting, and the plan is pretty much the mission of the Free State Project was to get the 20,000 signatures, then people have, you know, the 5 years to move. I think quite rightly, as you said, probably not all 20,000 are going to move, but the success we've seen just with, you know, the 1,500 movers we currently have here, I don't think we need 20. You know, I suspect like maybe 4,000 or 5,000 will come, and then other people will just start to come because New Hampshire will start to become this sort of Yankee Hong Kong is what I call it.
Yeah.
Right?
You'll recruit locals too.
Yeah, exactly. And so the mission of the Free State Project, it will dissolve. I think people are looking at, you know, other options. I definitely have other projects I'm interested in working on. I really just, you know, let's get those last 4,000 signatures and, you know, kind of get that benchmark or that milestone out of the way, and then have the people come in and then have people personally working on the projects they're passionate about. I mean, we have a woman who moved out here who started a private charity, you know, and we feed over 1,200 people now every Thanksgiving. It's a huge community thing. There are like 200 of us who get together. We all get maps. We drive to people's houses. You know, they're looking at, so really we're looking at how can we build a real place that reflects the ideas of freedom, you know, so private charity instead of, you know, stolen money. Can we reduce the tax burden so we can start to build a sort of an incubator, a startup culture? You know, the guys who run for office who hopefully, you know, help to dial back the government, you know, instead of there ought to be a law. And, you know, so the Free State Project, once its mission is gone, I think that will dissolve and people will do other things. I mean, I have some plans that I know I want to pursue. And, you know, it's not always easy. You know, I think people think, oh, you know, wow, that's a great job and whatever. I'm like, you know, I mean, we all know what kind of people we are. And some days the cat herding is not as easy as others.
Excellent. We'll be back with more after this trip to the free market on the Freedom Fiends. Talking to Carla from Free State Project.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair, or Libertarian Paradise, and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com.
Looking for a new home with good neighbors, no income tax, an active shooting culture with excellent Second Amendment protections, a great business climate, and less government? Then Wyoming might just be the place for you. And freedom-minded folks are already there. Founded by author Kenneth Royce, FreeStateWyoming.org encourages free trade, political liberty, and voluntary cooperation. Come bask in the laissez-faire Western culture of the cowboy state. For details, visit FreeStateWyoming.org.
This is Michael Dean, also known as the Iron Hamster. Over in this corner, we have Dobby Barker, the Shiny Badger. And over in the other corner, we have Carla from the Free State Project, also known as the Golden Porcupine, I guess. No, we didn't make up a wrestling name for you yet, but you can
She's
if you want.
Queen Quill, man.
Queen Quill.
Yeah, don't mess with the royalty.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Dobby, ask a question.
Ask a question. I want to know how much work goes into setting up Porkfest, because this is only my second year, but I'm an old burner. I used to go to Burning Man like 10 years ago, and watching them set up was a phenomenal thing to see. So like what goes on behind the scenes for Porkfest?
Yeah, and I'm really glad you asked that question, because I think people don't always have an appreciation for the fact that it's mostly volunteer driven. I mean, we have a team of 20 people now who basically have given up their lives for the past 6 months, especially Christine and David Butler, who, you know, are doing the heavy lifting for this year. I personally organized Porkfest in 2009 and 2010. I may be one of two people who was a sucker enough to do it twice. But even just having that experience, and back in those days, you know, it was maybe a 600-person festival. And now we've grown, you know, we're expecting probably 2,000 people this year. And it's huge when you consider, you know, it's all volunteer-driven. We sort of start from a zero budget. You know, we have to – it's everything logistics, like renting the tents. It's, you know, human relations, i.e. having to deal with people, trying to sell the tents. Tickets, of course, lining up the speakers, writing the magazine and the program and scheduling stuff. And, you know, as I said, we have over 300 events. And, you know, so just to get the schedule together is crazy. And this year, the theme is do it yourself. So we solicited or invited everyone who wanted to speak to send in a proposal. The odd thing, beekeeping is like the hot topic right now.
Is Mark Edge doing that? I know he does bees.
I'm not sure if he's doing one, but I know we have three different people doing beekeeping workshops. Cool. And then we have, you know, I'm teaching a class on how to make biltong, which is kind of American. It's a South African version of American jerky, and it tastes much better, and it can last up to 10 years. It was something that, you know, people kind of made back in the day during the Boer War. And then we have, you know, Sholin Rifle Works is coming in. They're the same people as, you know, the Bardo Farm, which is a sustainable farm in the Upper Valley where I source most of my eggs and meat from. I get my pigs. I stopped by yesterday to bring me some duck eggs, you know. And they're actually doing a build your own AR class. So yeah, that's what I mean. You have to pay extra for that one, and it is in like the $600 range, but I think that's going to be pretty exciting. They're sponsoring the newbie shoot this year. So there's like shooting bands, bonfire, food, competitions, humans versus zombies. So the lineup,
I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. we were thinking maybe for next year, you know, we can do something fun, you know, maybe we do thick versus thin libertarians or something where you take the same concept, but, you know, people can go paintball out some of their frustrations. So really, I mean, it is it's a really, really big job. And if people are interested in sort of knowing, we put the team up on porkfest.com. That's porkfest.com. People can check out the schedule there as well. Ticket sales are now closed until the event itself. And of course, it'll be June 22nd through the 29th up in Lancaster, New Hampshire. That's up in the beautiful White Mountains. And we will, you know, be taking walk-ins. It'll be $100 for the week. I recommend that people come from Sunday to Sunday. That's really fun. It's been great to really see that people are coming for the whole week. It used to be like we would ramp up towards the weekend, but last year it really was like people were coming for the whole week. Lots of family activities. Actually, the family stuff looks really great this year. The Gibsons are organizing that. There'll be a daily craft class for kids making like really fun stuff like marshmallow shooters and bird nests. Bird houses, and there'll be kids' movies. There's a swimming pool. There's a slip and slide. So it's also exciting to see we have the most children registered this year that we've ever had. And then, you know, and then it's also a huge party.
So is that like a tension? Like, do you end up with a sort of clash between the sort of family crowd and sort of the debauchery crowd?
I mean, it is. It's, you know, we emphasize personal responsibility. So as long as everyone's respectful, it kind of works out.
Excellent. Awesome. Thanks a lot, Carla, from Porkfest, for coming on Freedom Fiends. Worms.
Take care.
Yep.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. Have you ever wanted to move to the land of Libpear? Libertarian paradise, where there's fun for everyone that doesn't initiate force on others, fun for the kids, parties for the adults, buy and sell in silver or Bitcoin, scenic hikes and gun shoots, speeches to educate us all. The Porcupine Freedom Festival is Libpear in the White Mountains of New Hampshire for a week this summer, June 22nd to 29th. Get your tickets now before there's no more room. Porkfest, the event of a lifetime. Porkfest.com.
That's PORCFEST.com.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, Freedom Fiend. Yeah. And if things are reverberating in your brain, it's you. It's not the radio. I think I hit the cuss dump build a little early, and here's some insider baseball for you. It only works correctly on talking. If you hit it during music, it makes the music kind of skip and sounds trippy and falls down your wormholes of your ears.
Because it changes the speed to make up for the gap, right? Isn't that the way it works,
yeah,
essentially?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and it does it really well with talking because there's no set beat to talking. But with music, it sounds really strange. So, yeah. But no, that's not what just happened. If you heard music sounding really weird, it was your brain. It was whatever you're putting in your mouth that's making your brain skip. So we wanted to talk about Godwin's Law. Explain Godwin's Law, Davi, please.
So there is the commonly used Godwin's Law, and there is what Michael Godwin actually said. And they're different things. But Godwin's Law is this sort of internet adage that the first person to make a comparison to Hitler or Nazis automatically loses the argument. And what Godwin actually said was the longer a discussion goes on, the probability of one invoking the Nazis or Hitler approaches one. So he just meant that somebody will eventually compare someone to Hitler. He didn't say it's automatically a failure in the argument.
Well,
but that's the way it's used now.
I think the it's automatically a failure in the argument is a new thing because the past couple of years or 3 or 4 years, because I've heard Godwin's Law probably predating the internet. It does predate the internet, right?
It does. It's actually not a new thing at all. It was first used in 1950. The first use of it that I found, it wasn't called Godwin's Law. It was called Reductio ad Hitlerum.
So 1950. So like basically the day, you know, like a couple days after the Nazis were defeated, people were comparing people to Nazis in arguments.
And you know why they were? It was because they were people who were trying to push eugenics programs, and they were sick of being compared to Hitler.
They should be compared to Hitler. Although, you know, a lot of the most horrible things the Nazis did, the Americans took up, including doing medical testing on poor people and prisoners and unsuspecting people who can't defend themselves.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I think this is actually a really dangerous custom, this idea that you're just going to throw it in someone's face and say that they violated Godwin's Law if they compare to fascism, because all that means is that there's a red carpet rolled out in on the internet for people to start pushing fascist ideas.
Huh. Yeah, I would say so, too. And I would say any politician can be compared to Hitler. It's just a matter of degrees.
Right. That's the other thing. Yeah, not all comparisons are comparisons in quality or quantity. That you can compare other things. But this guy, the guy who actually invented argumentum ad Hitlerum, was a guy named Leo Strauss. And he was in Germany during World War I, and he moved to the United States in 1937. And he pushed all kinds of fascist ideas. He was a political philosopher, and his main sort of claim or his main sort of thesis was there was a constant tension between human excellence and human freedom, and he wasn't sure that they could coexist.
That sounds like Hitler talk to me. I'm going to compare him to Hitler, man.
So this guy got frustrated that people kept comparing him to Hitler and invented this bogus rule that you can't compare people to Hitler.
Yeah, I mean, you know, basically Hitler thought freedom was decadent. And Hitler didn't only go after Jews and homosexuals and intellectuals and political dissidents and, you know, the physically infirm and the mentally infirm. He also went after art that he didn't like. I mean, he destroyed
– the first place he went was lawyers because he couldn't – tolerate dissenting legal opinions. So all you lawyers that think you exist in some sort of protected class, that's probably the first place it goes if this country goes south.
Yeah. Yeah. So lawyers should defend the trade unionists and the Catholics, even if they are neither. Although the trade unionists, I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah. But yeah, Michael Godwin is actually a pretty hip guy. He's an attorney for the EFF, and he seems to – his original intention was he wanted to curb sort of flippant comparisons to Hitler because he thought that that comparisons to Hitler, when they were appropriate, had to maintain their sort of weight. And if you just compared them to that all the time, then it would sort of water it down. So he had a good intention. But this Leo Strauss guy was just a fascist. But he's apparently one of the sort of like intellectual precursors to like modern neoconservatives. Like, he's a military imperialist. His philosophy was adopted by a lot of Christian fundamentalists. They call him the Straussians now.
See, I don't think you should avoid comparing people to Hitler. I think we should compare more people to Hitler. But I also think that it's fun to compare people to Stalin. You, sir, yeah, are like Stalin because it's as apt as Hitler, and Stalin actually killed more people. And Stalin,
he gets a free pass for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, or you could say Mao, Chairman Mao. But I like saying Stalin because Stalin, first of all, it just kind of like makes people's heads explode when you compare them to Stalin, because they have to go to like Wikipedia to find out what you're saying, because you know, the other thing is Stalin, more so than Hitler, went after his own. Like, he had his wife killed, I think, or thrown in prison. I mean, he had his inner he was extremely paranoid. Hitler was too. Hitler was shooting speed. Hitler was being injected with Benzedrine and B vitamins by his doctor and being told they were just B vitamins, which was actually pretty common from the 40s through the 70s for doctors. You know, when people were complaining of overwork, oh, it's so much work killing all these underlings. You know, when people were complaining about being burnt out, they would give them an injection in the muscle of a mixture of Benzedrine and B vitamins, which
Let's go Stalin. I am more practiced comparing things to Hitler, but I'd like to hear some comparisons to Stalin.
You like that one?
Hit me. Compare Nancy Pelosi to Stalin.
You, sir, are like Stalin. I don't know. let's look up Stalin. Let's see what kind of things he did. Let's see. Correctional labor camps, deportation, disruption of food production. Well, let's see. Nancy Pelosi does want to heavily regulate a lot of commerce. So I would say here's the thing, too. You can compare people. The term fascist is used a lot. Basically, people use it on anyone whose political ideology disagrees with their own. Like, I heard Bush called a fascist a lot.
Yeah.
Bush is a fascist. Every politician in America is a fascist to some degree or another, except Ron Paul, and he's no longer a politician.
Everything since the Interstate Commerce Clause is technically just a little bit of fascism, because isn't it essentially it's the marriage of business and government, right?
Right. Yeah, and it almost universally, true fascism almost universally goes along with totalitarianism, but there can be I don't really know if there can be totalitarianism that doesn't contain some fascism, because governments invariably want their fingers in all the pies.
That's interesting too. There are two fascisms. There is the academic fascism and what it actually is defined as politically, economically speaking, and then there's like soft or common fascism, which is just a word people use for anything authoritarian or totalitarian.
Well, actually, there's three kinds of fascism, because in the purest form, it's something that existed in Italy for only a few years.
The bundle of sticks.
And that's kind of interesting, because that bundle of sticks with the little axe on the side is the symbol of fascism. And libertarians every day and small government people every day in America are trading real currency that happens to have that stamped on the back of it.
The silver fasci. Yeah, it's true.
Do you ever notice that? Like those.
I have noticed that. Yeah. It's also the Lincoln Memorial. If you go to the Lincoln Memorial, Lincoln's hands are, each of them are resting on two fasci.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, those wonderful silver dime cards that you, Davy Barker, did the art for.
Yeah.
You're adding your art onto
spreading
something.
Fascism.
You are spreading the symbol of fascism. That's horrible. Yeah.
Right. I think the reason that Joseph Stalin gets a pass and the reason that other communist and socialist dictators get a pass is because the people who are telling us about history are trying to rescue socialism so they can continue to sort of propagate it here. And Hitler's nice and easy for them to say, oh, well, it isn't the socialism that was the problem. It was the death camps that were the problem. And they don't get that those two things are like inevitably connected.
Well, I mean, the other part of the name of that party is national. So like
we don't have a national socialist party. We have a nationalist party and a socialist party.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, what's that? The Republicans and the Democrats?
Yeah.
The nationalists and the socialists? Yeah, I'd say so. And why is nationalism dangerous and why is it false?
Why is it? Well, okay, it's false because it's just a kind of chauvinism. It's a sort of blind bigotry for the land you were born on and the borders that surrounded you when you happened to land here. And in that sense, it's irrational. It's as irrational as racism or hoorah for one team and not the other. It's sort of like there's no value judgment. And if there is a value judgment, if you like your country because your country represents freedom, then you shouldn't be nationalist. You should be a libertarian. You should sort of prefer those countries that have more freedom-oriented policies than the one that you have and not be sort of like American exceptionalism all the time. The reason it's dangerous is because it shuts down people's moral centers and their moral outrage. Like they feel like, oh, well, yeah, I'm angry about this, but it's Memorial Day, or I'm angry about this, but it's, you know, I'm going to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, even though, you know,
it
slows down the bulwarks we have against totalitarianism to sort of love the country that's hurting us.
Yeah. And I have a soft spot in my heart. For people who are nationalistic for America, I don't dismiss them outright as people.
I want to know what's motivating.
A lot of people do dismiss them outright and will never reach them. Because I grew up around them and I know that a lot of them in their heart of hearts are basically good people. And moreover, because they're about one long conversation away from being libertarian, a lot of them.
Sure. I mean, especially like the constitutionalists and things like that. You just sort of have to get into a conversation about the principles that made those documents phenomenal when they were written, but maybe, you know, not necessarily – they didn't necessarily work out the way they were intended, right? Sort of like Godwin's Law.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing that people have to remember about nationalism is that every country in the world teaches their young the same things.
I don't think that's true. Not to the extent that we have it in the United States, because most places don't even have a Pledge of Allegiance.
It's not said so much now that everybody has drones and nukes, but back when they had to send soldiers out with guns, it was said everywhere. Every country thinks they're the best.
I'll bet that's
pride. Every country has nationalism. Go to France and make fun of France and see what happens.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to announce the second annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It's at the Circle Pine Center just outside Kalamazoo, Friday, August 22nd through Monday, August 25th. There will be family and grown-up friendly activities, great conversation, presentations, and bacon. Lots of bacon. It doesn't matter if you're an OG libertarian, a newbie, or just anarcho-curious. Come on out and enjoy some voluntarism. For more information, go to miplc.org.
Freedom Fiends, Iron Hamster, Michael Dean, Dobby Barker,
Shiny Badger.
Shiny Badger. So we're, you, sir, are worse than Stalin. We're going to try to make that catch on because we like it better than Hitler. And it's new. It's fresh. All the kids are doing it. Worms.
Why so Soviet, Michael? Serious.
Why so Soviet? Yeah, I like calling people Soviet. Yeah, see, the thing is, you can call people's policies very Soviet, but you call people like Stalin. You call them Stalinistic. And it's
okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people don't even have to be politicians to be Stalinistic. And I'm reading about Stalin. Let's see. He was the Holodomor of the Ukraine.
A Holodomor, that's the thing you keep cigars in, right?
That's a humidor.
Like Monica Lewinsky was the Holodomor of Washington, D.C. during the Clinton administration?
Ooh.
No.
Is that radio friendly?
Too soon?
Too soon. You know, I actually know a woman.
What's a Holodomor?
Oh, it's a grand poobah. It's a council of, you know, head of
it's a... It's a grand title.
It's a shiny... There's a shiny badge that goes with it. Stalin liked his shiny badges. Hey, I know a woman who was on a plane shortly after the Lewinsky scandal. Actually, no, about 5 years after the Lewinsky scandal. And Bill Clinton... She was in first class. Bill Clinton was sitting in first class with two goons with him. And he was twirling an unlit cigar in his hands and like eyeing her. And this is true.
That's gross.
It's gross. But
yeah, why? That's so Soviet.
Yeah, that is so Soviet. Bring me a young blonde. And yeah, he was he talked her up and she was really turned on by him. I was really grossed out by the whole story, but he was complaining that he couldn't smoke on the plane. He said, "Yeah, I used to have my own plane.
He's
can't
the president.
Do this."
He can't smoke on his own plane?
No, this was on a commercial flight. He was talking about how he used to have Air Force One and could smoke on it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's that obedient privilege.
You know, I wonder who was hired and what they did, who was hired to rebrand him. Because he not only bounced back from, you know, basically date rape under color of authority. That might be too far, but, you know, doing something that he shouldn't have been doing.
They were consenting adults, but there was definitely a disparity of power.
Yeah, yeah. Although in LibPair, that would probably be part of any corporate leadership experience, and it'd be fine. And you'd probably have to sign some forms to allow it. But yeah, he's not only looked at as recovered from that, but like as a golden god by a lot of people in America.
They don't remember.
Oh, they remember that. They think it makes him a sexy, distinguished older gentleman. And
I guess what it is that the scandal overshadows everything else that he did. Like nobody remembers anything else that Clinton did.
Well, I almost think that the scandal was broken by him to distract from the Whitewater thing. And also,
like it's a wag the dog thing.
Yeah. And also, and you know, the book Wag the Dog was written before that scandal. It wasn't necessarily about him.
Yeah. He also bombed plenty of places. I mean, he was bombing Iraq before that was cool.
It was cool. Yeah. And he bombed something like during the week that the Lewinsky scandal broke to like distract from it. That's the
was
real wag.
Yeah, or Sudan or something. They're a horrible bunch of countries.
It was an aspirin factory that he said was making weapons of mass destruction. I think it was, yeah, Libya or Sudan. I think it was Sudan.
Aspirin factory. I don't remember that. I mean, I remember that happening. I don't remember what country that was in.
Yeah.
It feels like Sudan to me, but I don't know. But yeah, I mean, like, it's funny that like that's not what he's remembered for. Like people sort of have this impression that like, oh yeah, Bush is the one that started all this stuff. No, we've been doing, or they've been doing stuff in the Middle East and bombing people over there forever.
To all presidents of America and all nations, I say, you, sir, are like Stalin. It's just a matter of degrees.
Why so Soviet?
Why so Soviet? Why you gotta be so Soviet? Yeah. there's a King of the Hill where Hank Hill goes camping with Bobby in some national forest and it's overrun by hippies, and he gets in an argument with one of the hippies because they're making noise, and he's arguing with the hippie, and the hippie says under his breath at Hank, "Rumsfeld," and Hank says, "Why do you say that like it's a bad thing?" We'll be back on Freedom Fiends. hour two. You got any closing arguments there real quick?
No.
Don't be worse than Hitler, or don't be like Stalin. Don't be Soviet. Don't be so Soviet. That's our closing argument for hour one. We'll be back with hour two of the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the market. Yeah.
Worms.
We have not been contacted by the government. Worms. We have not been contacted by the government. It's only if we say word all the time.
Worms.
What sets Survival Punk apart from all those other survivalist sites? A rational, creative approach to self-reliance. Applying a punk DIY ethic to survivalism without any of the fear-mongering or tinfoil hattery that pervades the survivalist movement. Survival Punk covers a huge range of topics, along with a healthy bit of myth-busting. Survival Punk provides a ton of dirt-cheap creative solutions to common prepping problems, with an accent on the paleo lifestyle. Check out survivalpunk.com. That's survivalpunk.com.
Freedom Fiends, Hour 2. Freedom Fiends, Hour 2.
You, sir, are worse than Stalin.
You know, Michael, we meant to talk about Joseph Stalin, but we got stuck talking about Bill Clinton. I wonder if there's a connection.
It's because he's like Stalin. Yeah. He killed people to take things off of his personal life. He bombed an aspirin factory to get people's mind off of Monica Lewinsky's...
I looked it up. That was Sudan.
Okay. And, you know, I have a theory. I've never heard this theory before. I'm just saying it right now. Maybe he created the scandal with Lewinsky to take people's mind off of Whitewater. And wasn't there a...
I wonder if that's like a pickup line in the White House, like, hey, baby, want to make a scandal?
Could be. Well, you know, Dave Chappelle has a bit about how powerful U.S. presidents are in that... If you sleep with them, you can get a career out of it. And what a pickup line that could be. Because she got a book deal.
Yeah.
Wasn't there also a senator or congressman who was found murdered while jogging? Or like, and people tried to say it had something to do with the Clintons. Do you remember that one? He was found.
I don't know. Is it really murder if it's a congressman? No, I'm just kidding.
Man, that's some feisty macho libertarian flash to the nth degree.
I don't know this story.
The nut of it is that the guy was found dead of suicide with two bullets in his head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were they from the back of the head?
Let's see. When you Google Clinton suicide and two bullets, you get the death of Vincent Foster. What really happened? Yeah, Vincent Foster. Although there's a Snopes page called the Clinton Body Count, and it's false. Although, you know, I wonder how much you'd have to pay Snopes to lie for you.
I don't know.
Everyone probably has their price.
I mean, why is Snopes a definitive source on whether or not something is true or not?
I know. It's considered that, but I don't know why it is. It's just – it's two people, and they don't have magical powers. You know, it's a couple who look up rumors and do what research on the internet they can to find out if the things on the internet are true or not. Yeah.
Well, that's a lofty life's ambition. You know, I don't think you would ever finish.
we've decided everything on the internet.
Mistakes on the internet.
We've vetted. Yeah. Let's see.
It's a great bullet point on your resume. I'm an editor. Editor of what? The internet.
The internet. My wife said that shortly before she met me, she went on some dating site. Let's see. What was it? It was one of those really mainstream ones. Not Christian Mangle. What's the other one? I forget, but she said that one of the guys she talked to, she never went on a date with him. She talked to him on the phone, and she said, what do you do for a living? And he said, oh, I write commentary on IMDb. And it's like, that's something you don't get paid for that anyone can do.
Are you thinking eHarmony? That's sort of another big one.
Yeah, I think that was it.
And they're sort of, they're not specifically Christian, but they're Christian values. So you can't be gay on that site or things like that.
That's Square. Yeah, I met my wife on a dating site, but I'm not going to say the name of it.
We had, once my wife and I had already met and were already sort of talking about marriage, we had a dating site that like paired us and sent us both an email and said, hey, we think you guys should meet. And we both had to kind of admit that we had these dating sites still up.
Oh, man. That's funny. That's funny. Like you both got emails?
Yeah, the website sent us both an email and said, hey, I'd like you to meet Davi. Hey, I'd like you to meet Zahra. And it's like, yeah, you didn't take down your dating site profile? Well, neither did you.
Yeah, there's, you know, I tried to start a libertarian dating site. I had
90% men and the women were all, you know, paid accounts.
It was all men. It was, but I had a good URL for it. It was Liberty Loves Company.
That's a good name.
Yeah, because it kind of rhymes with Misery Loves Company. But so back to Stalin, he was the first Photoshopper politician. Explain that before Photoshop.
Yeah, there are these like famous photos. This is before. This is when a Photoshop was actually a shop where you developed photos.
Yes.
And there are these photos of him where like you can find the originals and then you can find the edited ones where he like took people out of history. Like I guess if they offended him or if he didn't want to be associated with them, they were sort of taken out of these photographs where he appears. And I'm not really sure why. Maybe it's sort of part of – maybe when they say you disappear, you really disappear. But it's a great – it's sort of like – it speaks to the propagandistic nature of communism, you know, where it's like even history has to be rewritten.
On the fly. Yeah, he not only had pictures of him frequently altered and had people on staff who's – or probably at gunpoint whose job that was – he also used body doubles. In his later life, he gained a bunch of weight, and he would actually do public appearances that weren't him. He would have a body double who kind of looked like him but was younger and thinner just go, you know, stand on the balcony of some square and wave at people and be cheered, but it wasn't him.
See, now if he was ruling in the age of Photoshop the program, he could have done that in Photoshop. He could have used the cinch tools and like taken off 10 or 20 pounds and he could have smoothed out the wrinkles on his face. They could have made him look like, you know, some sort of bionic man for his whole life.
Yeah, although
this was an execution. This says Nikolai Yadzhov was Photoshopped out of these photos after he was executed as a sort of enemy of the state. So they erase you backwards in time when they kill you.
Yeah, there was a lot of pre-Photoshopping done in actual shops where you photoed, you know, basically that means developing room, you know,
dark room.
No, that's where they take you to torture you in countries that aren't with the black sites. There was some Photoshopping of pictures in World War II, by the Soviets and the Americans. There's one that's really famous. It's a picture of an American standing in Berlin, an American soldier standing in the wreckage of Berlin after liberating Berlin. And what they photoshopped out of the American was he has like 10 wristwatches on his arm that he's pulled off of corpses.
And wow, that's dark.
Yeah, and they photoshopped out all the wristwatches, and it was
they didn't want him to look like a bourgeoisie. They had extra rich watches.
Well, they didn't want him to look like a grave robber.
Yeah, a lot of these photos, he has his hand in his coat too. I wonder if he's like trying to look like Napoleon or something, because Napoleon had an ulcer. That's why he always had his hand in his coat.
Maybe he had a lot of people back then had like bed bugs and vermin because it was hard to kill them. Maybe he was scratching.
He's holding his pet rat.
He's holding one of his enemy's daughter's kittens ransom. I will kill this kitten if you don't do my bidding. Stalin was fond of American cowboy movies. He would sleep in the evening in his Dacha after waking up, summoning high-ranking Soviet politicians to watch foreign movies with him in the Kremlin movie theater. Huh.
That's weird. Like, yeah. why would he like cowboy movies? I feel like there's almost no communism in cowboy movies.
His favorite films were Westerns and Charlie Chaplin episodes. That's weird because Charlie Chaplin... Well, Charlie Chaplin was basically a libertarian anarchist and was... very against the war and was excommunicated from America for that. But he was very anti-Hitler, you know? So even if you're a totalitarianist like Stalin, you hated Hitler. So you liked the guy, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. Yeah. He also banned any films with nudity. So if you think that nudity needs to be banned by the government, you, sir, are like Stalin.
Why so Soviet? Yeah, seriously. Next time we have somebody sort of getting these sort of puritanical bans on things, we ought to just call them Stalinist.
Well, another thing is Hitler was also very anti-smoking. So people who want to ban smoking are like Hitler.
Well, Stalin smoked a pipe, so maybe they should fight about it.
Hitler was shooting meth, so pre-meth.
I thought the German army mandated that people smoked because it was cheaper than food rations.
Than feeding them? Maybe during when you're in the war, but when you're back home, no, because your body belonged to Father Germany, to the fatherland. And that's how they said it. They basically said that anything you did
I'm sorry. That was the U.S. military. The U.S. military used to give people cigarettes because it was cheaper than food rations.
Yeah, because when you're smoking, you forget you haven't tasted a steak in a few months.
Yeah, it's an appetite suppressant.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, maybe the German military was shooting their soldiers up with speed. I've read that in some various conspiracy novels.
Yeah, that was true with the Germans and the Americans and the Japanese. It wasn't necessarily shooting. It was often pills, but they were given to keep people marching. They were also given to kamikaze pilots to make them more fearless of death in Japan. And they were also given to American bomber pilots who had to be up in the air. You know, back when they had, well, I guess they probably still have that. I don't know if they still have this, but when they had nukes in B-52s, you know, out an hour from Russian airspace all
the
time.
It's a dangerous thing to fall asleep at the wheel.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Remember in, what's the movie, The Guy Riding the Bomb? I'm having a brain fart.
I don't know, but I saw that in a Simpsons episode.
Dr. Strangelove.
There you go.
You haven't seen that movie?
No, I haven't seen that movie.
Man, you need to see that movie. It's a nice.
I think I'm turned off by it because I was such a big Dr. Strange fan.
I don't know what that is.
Doctor Strange is a Marvel comic. They're actually remaking the movie or making a movie out of it soon.
I think this predates that. This is from 1964. It's a great movie. It's called, the full title is Doctor Strangelove or How I Quit Worrying and Learned to Love the Bomb.
Yeah, I've seen that scene even because it's such a famous scene, but I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, but there's a scene where they're where the head pilot is talking to the pilots, where they're about to nuke Russia and jump out of the plane and put it on autopilot. And they're going through their rations and checking off what's in their rations. And one of the things in there is like 6 Benzedrine tablets. There's also like pantyhose and lipstick and chocolate and Benzedrine. That's a party. You don't even need to invite anybody.
Why would you have lipstick and chocolate in military rations? Is this like a joke?
I think it was – I don't think it was something that was officially given in rations, but I think it was something that people – probably to bribe starving women to have sex with them.
Oh, okay. That's definitely a high priority for the military.
I think it was. We'll be back with more wild accusations we can't confirm on the Freedom Fiends. It's radio, man.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Ah. is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and we were talking about movies about the bomb. There's a movie from 1964 called Failsafe, which is a really good movie that's kind of based on the same book that Doctor Strangelove is based on, but Failsafe is a drama, and Doctor Strangelove is a comedy. But the cast in Failsafe is amazing. It's like Walter Matthau, Henry Fonda, a young Larry Hagman, Dom DeLuise. Yeah, man, it's a good movie.
Wow.
Yep. Good movie. And the thing is, it's interesting, though, is that this movie was sued by the producers of Dr. Strangelove to get it to be released after Dr. Strangelove to give the advantage, because they're based on the same book, on Dr. Strangelove. That's so Soviet, man. You know who else is really litigious is Major League Baseball. I wonder if I can even say that without getting sued. But yeah, you can't even.
They sued churches for showing the game in their lobby. Right?
That's true.
I was at the Giants baseball stadium yesterday for the first time in probably 20 years. But it had nothing to do with baseball. It's actually really funny. So Jason King is the owner and operator of Sean's Outpost, which is like a Bitcoin homeless outreach in Pensacola, Florida. And he just ran across the country, 5,000 kilometers, ran from Miami to San Francisco. And so I went and met him at the finish line yesterday.
Wow.
And so it's all these Bitcoiners, right? And we're meeting at Giants Stadium at the like Willie Mays statue, who I understand is a baseball player. But here's the crazy thing. So Bitcoiners are all wearing their gear, and Bitcoin, you know, orange is the color of Bitcoin, and all the Giants fans are wearing their gear. And so like they're all wearing their orange. So as soon as the cameras come out and people start cheering for Jason, all the Giants fans like crowd around like, is it a player? Is it a celebrity? What's going on? And so the group photos look like these huge masses of people in orange shirts, but most of them are Giants fans who had no idea what was going on.
Wasn't there a group of people at Porkfest about 4 years ago that all had orange shirts? I remember one of the, and it was pre, it was, wasn't Bitcoin. It was not pre-Bitcoin, but it was pre-everyone knowing about Bitcoin. Yeah, and people said it kind of looked like some kind of cult. Like, you know, like 5-10% of the people in the picture, the group photo, are all wearing the same orange outfit.
I don't know about that, but I do. I mean, Bitcoin Not Bomb sells our Bitcoin shirts, and we always get orange. We do orange hoodies and orange hats and orange shirts. We, you know, it's our color.
Is orange the color of Bitcoin, or is it the color of Bitcoin Not Bombs?
So the original Bitcoin logo was orange, right? But Bitcoin Not Bombs was kind of the first organization to say, that's our brand. We are orange, right? And yeah. So you'll see a lot of orange and a lot of Bitcoin stuff, but we're the ones that really plaster it. Like all of our garb is orange and all of our everything is orange.
Well, you're also making clothes for homeless people, and orange, safety orange, probably makes them less likely to get run over by a car.
It's also less expensive. There's a lot of these sort of companies where they have trouble selling orange because it's not a very popular color. So we can get it discounted. And so that also like has in the past like helped us get discoined hoodies and distribute more for our money.
Did you say discoined?
Discoined.
Discoined.
You know, discounted.
Discoined.
So, but I got to tell you, the crowd at baseball games, I don't understand them at all. I don't understand having that level of enthusiasm for whatever random baseball team happens to be close to you when you were born.
Yeah, it's another form of nationalism, and I'm not going to criticize sports. I like the idea of sports, but I hate everything that kind of goes with it. Like you can't go to a sports game, a major league sports game, or even a rodeo without a bunch of nationalism attached to it.
Well, yeah, they do the Star Spangled Banner or the Pledge of Allegiance or something at the, you know, really what it is these stadiums, these huge like monstrosities, are subsidized by state and federal money. And as soon as that happens, I am entirely skeptical of the entire enterprise.
Yeah,
because to me that means this is not a free market hobby. This is a subsidized hobby. These are people who the government is spending a ton of money to herd them into this facility.
Yeah, and politicians always sell that on it's good for the community, and then rob a bunch of money from the community to make it happen.
I don't think it is. I grew up in Santa Clara, and the new, I don't know if it's Giants or what, but they just built a stadium in Santa Clara, and they're calling it like the San Francisco Giants in Santa Clara. Like they're still keeping it the San Francisco Giants, but the stadium is in Santa Clara now. And it's completely like destroyed the surrounding area. The traffic is terrible. The parking is going to be terrible. There's this huge like steel thing that like blocks out the skyline in this area that like used to be a nice place to go running. And I hate it. I don't know. I'm never going to go there. And yet somehow, because I live there, I'm expected to pay for it.
All right. We'll be back with more complaining about things most people like on the Freedom Fiends. Worms.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, there's some Squisklar Squig Elves from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
It's Michael Dean. I'm talking to Davi Barker, who is the Freedom Fiend's Holomador.
I don't like that title. No, thank you.
I think it comes with a shiny badge. Stalin awarded himself a lot of military medals, too.
Well, those are the best kind.
The ones you make yourself.
The ones you make yourself.
Yeah, except his represented murder. And the ones you make represent, I don't know if a pledge that you won't murder anybody, but you know, I think it's understood.
Ew. The Wikipedia page on Holomador says that it's Ukrainian for extermination by hunger or killing by starvation.
And that's a job title?
I guess so. My job is to starve you to death.
Why so Soviet?
I don't know, man. I am not a Holomador. I eat quite a healthy diet, especially a diet of worms.
That's a reference to another show we've had, an episode that we had. It's not an actual diet of eating worms.
A diet of worms.
I do have to update something. I said the other day that we have a warrant canary of that if we are ever contacted by the government but forced at gunpoint to not mention we've been contacted by the government, we will start saying word instead of worms. And a couple times yesterday, I said word, and bunches of people contacted me and asked if I'd been compromised. And
you freaked me out, man. I still don't know whether or not to trust your explanation.
Here's the thing. It's only the warrant canary if we've only ever say word. Although I think we could make an exception or a previso that if one person is contacted by the government and the other isn't, that person only will only say word.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you were saying both. You were saying like worms word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was like, I felt like you were testing me. Like I felt like it was a test of the emergency worm.
It was the test of the emergency worm system. Yeah. So you want to talk about sports?
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear you haven't been contacted by the government.
And, not that I know of. They may have put some wires in my brain while I was sleeping, but
so you contacted them inadvertently.
No. So back to baseball. I too went to a baseball game and was quite bored. It was right after I got sober. I did stupid things. I have an excuse. I was recently sober. Most people say I was drunk. That's my excuse. I was recently sober and was trying to like figure out how to work with society again, sober. And what I eventually came to, which I found very comfortable, is I don't work with society. I stay in my windowless bunker and broadcast in one direction and don't take phone calls very often and don't answer emails. And when people write me and tell me I'm great, I'm like, what? Leave me alone. You're bothering me. Buy something and go away.
That's been my solution too. I wonder if this is like, I wonder if isolation is the cure for addiction.
I think you and I are the only sober guys in Liberty. Now there's a few more, but
there's more than you think. People don't sort of preach about it, but there are a lot of people that don't drink.
I don't preach about it. I do mention it because I don't know. It was, I guess because I'm an advocate for the legalization of all drugs. And I think people automatically assume, oh, you just want to be able to smoke your pot. And I'm like, I don't smoke pot, man. I haven't done that in 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't do any drugs. I'm totally square, right? But I have a kind of vicarious joy of like seeing people free to enjoy the lifestyle that they've chosen. But at the same time, when I look around at like libertarians who are you know what it is? It's that I feel like these brains are too important to be off 50% of the time.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's a compliment, right? Then this isn't prescriptive. This isn't me shaming anybody or anything. I'm just saying, I love your brain. Leave it on. You know?
Yeah. Don't contract your consciousness. Constrict your consciousness.
Yeah. But at the same time, I understand that, you know, it's a hard world to live in. And sometimes people got to shut off. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I'd also say that,
I watch zombie movies, for example.
Yeah. When your brain is on 100% of the time, like with smart libertarians, and not clouded by the goofiness of the state, it can be overwhelming. I can understand why people would want to turn down the volume once in a while.
Did you ever see the movie Pi? Like P.I.?
Yeah,
like
let's talk about that for a minute. But I want to say one more thing about, speaking of turning down the volume, that movie Pump Up the Volume that we reviewed the other day, I forgot to mention the main reason I loved it, other than it was great, was it was about a radio guy who doesn't talk to anybody except on the radio, and that's me.
No, you appealed to the main character. Yeah. That's why a lot of people like
it. The difference is, though, I can talk to people. I can get up in front of 300 people and give a talk. I have no problem with it. I can talk one-on-one. I prefer talking to small groups of people. But I'm not afraid of people the way the main host was there. I've done it by choice. I used to be out in the bars every night. I used to be a popular guy. I used to have my phone number listed in the book. I used to love it when strangers would call me. That's a phase I'm done with in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. I can understand that. I mean, there's a diminishing utility to sort of random contact from strangers, right?
Yeah. You know, I once said that the wonderful thing about the internet is that you can talk to people, you get contacted by people you'd never meet otherwise.
You get to pick your dose too.
And the horrible thing about the internet is that you get to talk to people you'd never talk to otherwise. I mean, I've made a lot of great friends over the internet that I never would have met otherwise. And I'm actually going to meet a bunch of them in a couple weeks here, which is pretty cool. But think about the concept of getting in a screaming argument that has no logic in it, where everyone's calling each other Hitler, with somebody you'd never meet otherwise. Think about how ridiculous that is.
Like in a food court in a mall or something. Like you're sitting with your friends in a food court in a mall and you're talking about sports and the guy turns around and says, why are you such a fascist? I like the Giants.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
that would be very unusual.
Arguing on the internet, it's kind of like, you know, if you lived in Wyoming, suddenly teleporting to the food court in Ohio and arguing with somebody.
Yeah. It's like a wormhole between food courts.
I have no interest in it, man. This sounds crazy to a lot of people, but I have no interest in debating or arguing with anybody because nothing good will come of it. And people who like to debate, it's generally to show how shiny and cool they are at slick language. And whether or not they resort to logical fallacies, even if they're a good debater and follow all the rules of debate, there's no.
It's like the difference between.
It's like a boxing match.
Like judo versus jiu-jitsu, right? Like judo is this sort of martial art where there's all these rules and there's certain things you can't do, and it's really designed to be a point system, not a combat. And then jiu-jitsu is like actually like take the man down, win the fight, right? Like self-defense.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have an interest in either in a verbal I know I'm right. I don't have to argue with anybody about it.
Well, that's the thing. There is no such thing as verbal self-defense, because a person could yell at you all day long and they're not going to persuade you of anything. They're not going to force you to change your position.
Yeah, and there's really there's a lot of debate as to whether or not you can violate the non-aggression principle with words. I would say you cannot, unless they're backed with guns. Unless yeah, they're back with threats.
If you're threatening someone.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Laws are words, which are, you know, violating your civil rights to be, your right to be. But, sticks and stones, man. You can always block people on the internet.
I've definitely taken up that habit. I used to be I add all the friends on Facebook because I want a large number of people sort of, you know, participating and commenting and clicking my links and whatever. And then, it got to the point where I'm like, I'm not enjoying this anymore. Like, there are too many people here saying too many stupid things, and I've decided that I unfriend and I block people. If yeah. I'm not enjoying your company, get out of my room.
I really feel like the internet has worldwide really increased free speech, because the slaves can now talk to each other, whereas they couldn't
absolutely.
Before. But I also feel like it gives a lot of illusion of free speech where there isn't much, and I feel like it I feel like a lot of people don't know what free speech is. You know, like if you're on Facebook, I feel like social networking gives an illusion of free speech because it's own. You know, it's owned.
What is free speech? What is pre-internet free speech? What makes it free? What makes it effective that we're not getting?
Man, that could be a
whole show. For example, like Common Sense, right? Like Common Sense was this little booklet that was written by this guy, Tom Paine. And he publishes it and it gets wildly popular, and it's sort of like the first sort of viral self-published book, right? And that's an example of free speech changing the culture, maybe. Does that not happen now? Is that not
that happens? That happens, but the signal to noise ratio is a lot louder because everybody's talking. Most of what happens on the internet is people either speaking to the choir and other people agreeing with them, or it's people arguing their choir with another choir. I would argue that what we're doing is very important because we are speaking true liberty on a platform where there isn't a lot. On talk radio, there's a lot of, you know, left, right versus left talking, and there's very little discussion except with us in Free Talk Live of, hey, why do we need masters at all?
I wonder if what we're seeing is that the Signal platform and the Noise platform are now the same platform. Because I'll bet back in the day when people were publishing things like Common Sense, there was still plenty of noise. It was just people talking in taverns and people talking in church and, you know, people saying, you know, what their favorite sauce for whatever kind of burrito was. I have no idea. But all that noise took place in different venues. And if you were publishing something, you were sort of effectively saying, this is not noise, this is Signal, right?
Well,
whereas now there's no barriers. Noise and Signal flows back and forth between all of these platforms.
Yeah. Well, you know that the Ethiopian church banned secular consumption of coffee, and then the beverage was banned in the Ottoman Turkey Empire for political reasons because coffee shops became free speech zones.
And that's dangerous.
And the Ottoman Turks didn't like, you know, the people. And this was like, it wasn't even necessarily people who could read. They were getting together and talking, and that was dangerous. You know, they weren't publishing anything. They were just talking.
So it was a freedom of assembly issue.
Yeah, yeah. That darn coffee. It gets people uppity and talking their thoughts to each other.
Well, that's unacceptable. I mean, to some extent, I've always thought that that's part of why things like marijuana are illegal. It's because it tends to be a communal drug. Like, people don't usually sit around. They sit in circles and pass a joint, right? It's a communal drug. And then they sit around and they have crazy thoughts and they have crazy conversations and they question everything and they come to unusual conclusions. Like, that is always sort of, I've suspected, although I have no evidence, that that's why power structures don't like it.
There's a lot of reasons why power structures don't like it. It's a threat to the pharmaceutical industry, the textile industry, the paper industry. I think in the long run, though, it's horrible that people go to jail for drugs, but it's going to bring more freedom because more people will realize the government is horrible. They're banning something they shouldn't. Yeah. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This is the Central Scrutinizer.
I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to
torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Dobby Barker.
Present. Here.
What do you wonder if the community wouldn't, what community wouldn't be better off if what?
I wonder if the Liberty Movement wouldn't be better off actually abandoning comparisons to Hitler and just sort of universally agreeing as a custom, we're going to start doing comparisons to Stalin. Because the reason Stalin gets a free pass and Hitler doesn't is because it's really easy to blame Nazi stuff on racism instead of socialism. So if we start comparing things to like famous socialists and communists who, you know, killed their own people, then people don't get that pass. They have to acknowledge and look in the face, hey, this is the product of socialism.
If you wanted to not be accused of exaggerating, it'd be even more fun and hipper, I think, to say, you, sir, are like Nixon.
Yeah, there you go. Pick awful presidents.
Or if you want to be really hip, just pick the current president. You, sir, are like Obama.
God, that's so Obama. Why you gotta be like that?
Yeah. Those guys are horrible.
It's only going to offend half the people, though.
They're holodors. What's the word? Homodors?
Holodomo. Yeah. It's a Ukrainian word. It's hard to pronounce. But it apparently means one who kills people by starving them.
Yeah, and I didn't know what it meant. I thought it was where you keep cigars, and I called you that. And you are quite the opposite of that. You feed people.
Yeah, that's right. Once a month, at least, I participate in a thing called Project Feed, where we go around handing out brown bag lunches to the homeless in San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's technically illegal, and I'm the only one in the group that thinks this is important. Like, everyone sort of throws up their hands and like, oh, they would never bust us for feeding people. And I'm like, no, I read these stories all the time about them cracking down on people trying to feed the homeless. This government wants a monopoly on feeding the homeless, and they're... You know, so I'm sort of cautious if there's cops around. But I also see cops abusing the homeless people. Like last week, I actually saw a cop like kick the lunch that I gave the homeless person away.
Man.
And it's like, man, that's so Soviet.
That is so, so very Soviet. Yeah. Do you give
them trying to do a good deed, man.
So when the cops come around, you don't open carry your sandwiches.
I don't open carry my sandwiches, right? This is a conceal carry sandwich.
Yeah, I think so.
And I don't even have a conceal carry sandwich permit.
I think that San Francisco would be slower than other people, other cities, to crack down on that because they've cracked down on it in the past. When I used to work at and eat at Food Not Bombs.
Yeah.
Do you know about them? I mean, you must if you named her.
This is why I know about this is because I used to work with Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz and I saw Santa Cruz do it. So from my perspective, if Santa Cruz will crack down on illegal homeless feeding, I don't see why San Francisco wouldn't.
Yeah, well, I'd be surprised if San Francisco did, except they've been kind of cracking down on things I never thought they would, like people playing chess on the street. That blew my mind, man.
Yeah, that was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah. Do you know the band MDC?
No.
Millions of Dead Cops. They were a punk band that I knew when I was living there in San Francisco in the 80s. Sunny. That's what?
That's Sunny. Yeah. What a pleasant name.
They have a song called Soup Kitchen Celebrity, which is about being in a famous punk rock band but starving and actually eating at soup kitchens.
Okay.
I almost want to play it, but I can't find the lyrics, so I'm just going to send it to you.
Might not be safe for radio.
I will put it in the I can't trust that a band called Millions of Dead Cops is going to have every lyric radio friendly. So I will put it in the show notes.
Sure. Maybe we'll play it tonight if it turns out to be safe for radio.
There you go. Yeah. So. Dobby's going to be back in 10 hours on the Freedom Fiends because Sunday is the day we do two shows. It's actually technically the one tonight's Monday because it starts Central Time at midnight, which is tomorrow. And I think it's getting rebranded as the Freedom Fiends tonight. We'll see. It's been called Michael Dean After Dark for a while, and I've been calling it the Freedom Fiends, but it's radio is kind of a lumbering behemoth, and it takes a while to get things inserted and approved and uploaded to satellites and things like that. So we'll see. So tell me about belt-fed cheese real quick.
Yeah, you called string cheese belt cheese, and I was like, what does that mean? And it's because it resembles the belts you use to feed cartridges guns. Into a machine gun. So yeah. I use that. In the next Survivor Max, the kids in the school who create a sort of food black market, they refer to it as belt cheese, and so they call them cheese cartridges, and they trade them like money, like it's prison.
And that's where we're headed, America, maybe. Who knows?
At least it has intrinsic value.
Yeah, yep. It's not fiat cheese, it's real cheese. So we'll be back with more. It's not government cheese. That was another punk rock band. Yeah. All right, we'll be back tonight in 10 hours. Same bat channel. If we're not on your local station, call them and tell them to put us on at night. Worms.